Welcome to Castabas. My name is Christian Corley, and his name over there is James McLean, although Google insists that his name is McLean. When I asked him to, I asked my digital assistant to message you last night on WhatsApp to...
So is that new to you? I can't remember whether you've always said McLean or you've...
I've always said McLean
in the past. You have always said McLean.
I've always said McLean, yeah. Because you, back from when we first started doing the podcast, you introduced yourself on
early
episodes.
Okay.
So I know that you are called James McLean.
I have no memory. I had a... I went over to my family's last night and...
Are they all called McLean?
Actually, they're not. It's a mysterious name, mine. Mine is a mysterious name. It doesn't belong to my family. Well, it does kind of, but doesn't it? It's a long story.
Okay.
But yeah, I went over and there was these... my mum had had some guests round and had bought some vegan cupcakes.
All right.
Okay, that's nice. I don't know where they're from. They were quite expensive. Okay. Apparently, they were like a pound a cupcake. You know,
yeah, I think it sounds cheap. Like Og to me.
Yeah, and I was like, and she was like, they didn't eat them. They need to be eaten. And she said, you know, on one of their birthdays last year, she said, you know, you like these because you ate them all, and you didn't leave any. And my sister was sort of passive scowling a little. And I was like, I have no memory of this. I have no memory of these cakes. I have no memory of eating these. I have no memory of the incident. And I found it weird. I sat down. I was like, these are really good because it's like the first time I'd eaten them. And then I ate the nine. And it was really weird to think because they were like, you know, you did that. And I was like, I didn't do that. Previous me did that. But I have no memory of that. I cannot be accountable because it's weird. It's like I have no memory of those... first episodes. Oh, I know. Okay, it was like what, 15 years ago?
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
I have very little memory of things like that. It is almost like a different person did those things, and you're being told. Yeah. And it's just time is crazy like that. But those cakes were really nice.
Well, it kind of is a different person that long ago because you know, every 6 years or something like that, your body completely regenerates its cellular structure.
Apparently,
something
I know,
like that.
But
yeah,
it's. Because there's always that debate around, you know, in Star Trek around transporters, do they kill you and then reassemble you?
Yeah.
And there's a large fight back, which I think is true, is that's not the case, because I don't think that's in the show's ethos, for one. And two, they've got Heisenberg compensators and things to sort of mean that it's not doing that. And there's examples where it doesn't, although there are stories where it suggests it does, et cetera, et cetera. But in a weird way, it doesn't matter because... that person from 15 years ago is pretty much dead. I have memories of it, but it could have been I've gone through a transporter and I'm an entirely new version of me, and I'm not that person. And that's a weird feeling when you think about it. It's like, yeah, I know I am that person, but ultimately, kind of not.
Yeah.
And that person is dead, and this is me now. And I know this goes back to whole sort of like Doctor Who regenerate-y sort of things, which... maybe. And I suppose there is that line that Matt Smith has, which sort of suggests that, you know, we are constantly going through iterations of ourselves changing. But it is literally weird when you feel that sort of sense of, yeah, that person was totally not who I am now, because I don't remember most of the things that person was doing. If it was me, surely I'd remember everything. So for me, I die every 2 to 3 days, probably, because my memories of last week are so vague. I'm a regular death, probably. Maybe. I don't know. I feel morbid saying that now. I'm distinctly uncomfortable. My anxiety is rising. Change the subject, Christian.
So you've been very concerned over the past few weeks that we haven't received any awards in our 14 years of podcasting together.
And to segue, I would say I have no memory of this, but I must admit I do. Yeah, I do have memory of
this. So, this isn't an award, but we have been included in a list of the top 100 classic TV podcasts of 2025. And we're number 34.
Number 34?
Of 100. Now, I know it's not number one of 100, but even so.
Okay, I've got to ask, because what's the name of our podcast? Castabas, isn't it?
Castabas Classic TV.
So, Castabas Classic TV, K... and we're about 30. Are you sure this is not an alphabetical list that you've looked at?
Well, no, because either side, we do have one called Keeping Up with the Coens, the OC box set rewatch podcast at number 33. But number 35 is Breaking Maybury. And number 36 is Saturday Morning Serial. And way back at number 32 is Ciampa and Klein, the 80s years. Whatever the hell that is. And
yeah, these all feel...
Don't Touch That Dial.
these all feel weirdly specific, while ours is really general.
Well, ours is more general, yeah. There's a Cheers podcast at number 28 called Norm, and there's Presenting Alfred Hitchcock Presents at number 27. Now, up at number one, and I don't think this is, I don't think this is done by numbers, I think it's just the way they've ordered it, is Bananas for Bonanza, which is the most fantastic name for a podcast. And at number 100, actually there isn't 100, there's only 98, is something called A Special Presentation. Now I'm feeling like they've just found nearly 100 podcasts and put them in a list together. But anyway, there's Dragnet podcasts.
How did they get wiped out in 98? There must have been two more podcasts that they could have, if that was the case.
There's at least two on the Twilight Zone, and there's a few Doctor Who ones. But look, we're in a list, so we're making progress.
That's a start.
It's a start. Yeah, exactly.
You got to be in the list of ingredients for the cleaner to wash the floor, haven't you? You've got to be one of the things.
How do you make disinfectant?
Exactly. You need stuff. You need bits. You need probably bleachy things, and we might be one of the bleachy things.
Yes.
Yeah. And
sound effects here.
Four floors need to be cleaned. Don't you dare put in one of your sound effects.
Anyway, listen, we do have something to talk about, ladies and gentlemen, but I just wanted to, because another thing that we'd discussed in a recent podcast is how other podcasts, as if we've just started doing this, is how other podcasts have a conversation between the hosts of how their week's been.
Yes, they do, don't they?
How's your week been?
It's been pretty stressful. There's been some good bits. I've interviewed BAFTA-winning TV documentary producer Neil Grant the other day, which was interesting.
All right, okay.
That was cool. Been a lot of stress in sort of in my working life, trying to get things sorted and plans. I'm a bit of a control freak. That's my issue. I don't particularly like delegating tasks because then I've delegated my ability to make sure that task works away.
But he's finally delegating all the producing of the podcast to me, ladies and gentlemen.
Don't I already do that? I do nothing, don't I? I have totally delegated all responsibilities of this podcast to the rightful owner, to be fair. I don't like delegating. If I'm driving a car, I don't like delegating the gear stick to another person.
No,
I like to have
fine.
Control of it, because otherwise I might have problems steering the car.
Yeah.
So that causes ultimately a lot of stress. I'm not a good, I think I'm a good team player, but ultimately I think sometimes, especially in creative works, and I think this must be the same for you as well, when you've got sole control over it, it's more satisfying, and you can take it on the chin when things don't work as well, because you know it's all on you. You can't shift the blame.
Yeah, the only thing with that is, I do agree to a great extent with that. The only thing is, when it's creative stuff that I'm not being paid for, it also lands on me to get my ass into gear and do it. So, for example, I started a book in, I don't know when it was. I'm going to say 2018. I still haven't finished it. Although I finished writing it, but unfortunately I'm also doing the layout for it. Mm. And I've recently decided I don't like the layout.
Layouts are hard.
Yeah, so I've started redoing it. So I don't know when the bloody book's going to be ready.
Well, actually, there's two things I found fascinating this week. And one of them demonstrates my inability to remember things. The first one is, did we talk about Thomas the Tank Engine?
No.
No. Okay. Yeah, this blew me away. And I'm not saying this is like some deep cracked.com knowledge. I think a lot of people know this, but I didn't. I always assumed that the Thomas the Tank Engine was actually set on the Isle of Man. And then having read into this, and then having realized that the original book is actually far darker and far more politically skewed, it's actually set on the fictional island of Sodar, yeah. which to me is so sci-fi. But I didn't realize that it has been created. It sits very tightly between the Isle of Man and Cumbria, with Barrow as being its access.
This is interesting.
That it has a rising population. So from what I understand, the people within that sort of community, whether it's the authors or the fans, track its population. It's got now over 1 million people on it.
Was the Reverend Audrey from Isle of Man?
I don't know.
Because I also thought this.
I think there was some sort of connection to the Isle of Man.
So that might be what it is, because I also thought this. And then when watching episodes of Thomas the Tank Engine, not even the original run, the more recent ones, and hearing mention of the island of Sodor, it is a bit fantasy, isn't it? So the word Sodor.
The word Sodor is absolutely, and I think that has Isle of Man links. But right. I mean,
it sounds it's come from Tolkien.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure the podcast ranked at number 14, you know, tally-ho, Thomas the Tank Engine, his fans will be listening to this and going, what the hell, this is all common knowledge.
But to yeah, me, and they've probably got an intro by Ringo Starr.
Oh, that would be, yeah, I suppose so. That would make sense.
Remember, we used to have an intro by Tom Baker. The real Tom Baker.
Yeah, when I did the Millennium podcast, we'd have intros by Lance Henriksen. It's doable. You can get the people if you know they're interested. But yes, and I think this was fascinating, and I'm sure those people on that podcast have already talked about this many, many times. But once you start thinking of it as actually a place with a rising population, you start to acknowledge that there is a continuity and there's a history.
Yeah.
And then you start thinking, well, okay, I've always noticed, and again, I'm sure the people on the podcast will be able to correct me or snort or scoff at me, but sentience has heads in Thomas the Tank Engine. So a sentient train has a face.
Yeah.
Helicopter, or I think there might be a tug or something which had a face. I'm not sure. But, and there's like, so what scale of an engine do you have? To become sentient, because as I remember, say like the Fat Controller's car never had a face on it.
Right,
you know, bikes didn't have a face, tables horrifically did not have faces. So it feels like sentience in that space is kind of linked to having an engine, but of a specific size. So right. Only certain things have sentience. Now this becomes a little more curious because you think,
well, Freudian,
possibly. That in theory, if the continuity carries a sort of similar train or track to us, which if it is on the island of Sodor, which is linked to actual geographical spaces, so it's not like, you know, not a good example, an island which exists in its own continuity, it kind of is situated within on the Earth. When do engines? Where's the start of their history? Is it with the Industrial Revolution? Is that the birthplace of engine sentience? Which, in case it is, that's kind of fascinating. So do the engines have their own sense of continuity, of genealogy? I mean, there would certainly be engines which would actually still exist, probably with faces, that were from that period. They might be in museums, but they would exist. They would know the beginning of their race as such. And as soon as we start talking about a race, then you start thinking about, there seems to be a lot of labor going on, and I never see much rewards. And in fact, there's that famous episode where, is it Gordon? One of them who doesn't like being out in the rain is bricked up in a tunnel for as punishment, which to me seems quite severe for an employee. It doesn't seem so severe for other types of controlled labor, if you see what I'm saying. Uh-huh. So just for a night, I was swamped in this sort of fascination about Thomas the Damn Tank Engine and just, you know, the implications. And it's what's so fun, isn't it? I mean, people say this is overthinking, but as we've said before, I think you look at Stephen Moffat and the sort of overthinking he does has become part of his craft. You know, he is dissected, and whether you like it or not, he built his universe around his understanding and his overthinking of Doctor Who.
As did
Russell T. Davis. You know, there's a power to this. This critique of what is there. It can be funny. It can seem silly, but sometimes new ideas grow from it. And I'm, as I said, I'm sure this has all been critiqued by the fandoms, but for me, outside of that fandom, realizing that a show that I've never had any connection to particularly, apart from finding the idea of someone like the Fat Controller who would move when you're not looking at him, a precursor to the Weeping Angels, I guess, was always quite amusing, but I've never had any connection, that there is such a deep and interesting legacy. And you can go on Google and you can see some really intricate maps of the island. You can see some very fun maps, but you can see some serious, like,
I'm doing that right now,
survey maps of all the settlements. And again, it's just this fascinating thing about world building, which I absolutely love.
Now, one of these images looks strikes me as slightly familiar. Now, did you ever did you use a public library as a child?
Yeah, I did.
Right. Did you see Thomas the Tank Engine books in the library?
Probably.
Yeah, because I think one or some of these editions had a map on the back, and I think that's maybe where this Cumbria link comes from.
Oh, right. Okay.
So maybe, because as I said, I also thought the same for a time. And I think maybe it's because you see Cumbria on this map on the back of the book. Or within the book, or wherever it is on the book. I'm certain I've seen it on a book. And it just folds into your head as being in Cumbria. It's being the Isle of Wight, because the Isle of Man, beg your pardon, because it's the island that's off Cumbria. So I think that's maybe where this comes from. It is a bit Mandela effect-y, though, yeah.
I mean, it's a 60-mile wide island. It's, you know, it's a big island.
Yeah.
It just appears in the British Isles. It's just kind of mad that you don't see shows do that. You know, you see like Postman Pat is, I think is meant to be the Lake District, maybe. I don't know. Cumbria. Yeah. Cumbria, my brain's going crazy. Yeah, but to actually create an island which situates, you know, it just feels like it splashes into that space. I mean, did it rise? Did it come out of the water with the, I don't know. Are the
engines
elsewhere?
With sentient trains on it.
You know, do the sentient trains or the sentient things, are, you know, do they exist in other areas of the world? Do they have the different rights in different areas of the world?
Mm.
You know, are some of them in the civil service down in London? You know, seriously big offices there.
Well, there used to be that recently retired train track under the streets of London, didn't there, that delivered post.
Oh, right. I'm not sure I knew about that.
Oh, yeah. It was like a compact train. So it would be about, imagine like coal carts, that sort of size of vehicle, under various streets in London that would distribute post from main sorting offices to smaller sorting offices around London. But they've retired it because they, you know, capacity started going down, so people use email more.
So that was one thing which interested me. The other thing I noticed this week, which might be worth mentioning just very briefly, is again, this was announced a couple of weeks ago now, is Neighbours disappearing again.
Yes!
So Neighbours, which was cancelled in 2021, 22, my brain forgets when, was then picked up by Amazon for its, at then time, new freebie service, and it came back and it's done 2 years of very good ratings. It's been sort of number one or number two on that freebie service. But now they're retiring the freebie service. They've decided they're finishing their connections with the show. So it looks like the show is planning on its 40th year, another finale where it'll end again, which is... I think it's an interesting situation again, because it's not because it wasn't popular, but because simply the way that it was being distributed is just no longer a method that the parent company wants to go down anymore. So there's no real space in its future content provisions for that show, for a soap, which is kind of precarious now, because in a way, it had demonstrated that that sort of service was a viable space for soaps. It worked. It did well.
Yeah.
But once that service is gone, or those services are going, where does something like Neighbours exist? Because it doesn't naturally exist on more traditional streaming platforms. And if broadcast television is kind of turning its nose up at soaps, and as we've said before, you know, EastEnders and Coronation Street makes nowhere near the numbers it used to make.
Oh yeah.
Is this kind of like a slow end to the soap here? You know, is that long form serial content, you know, television, let's content word aside, is that a death? Which I think is a great shame if it is. I mean, I'm not a massive fan of soaps, but as I've said before, I think the actual notion of continual ongoing story formats is really interesting. But there we go.
Yeah. The thing about Neighbours that I most intrigued me the most, there's two things. The fact that Ian Smith has terminal cancer.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is obviously very sad news. He's 86. He's had a massive influence on Australian television over the years, both as an actor and a writer. He's obviously done theatre work as well. So that would be a huge loss. But also that Anne Charleston's returning.
Yes, in a very bizarre way. I think she has returned. I must admit, I was watching it quite avidly up until about Christmas, and workload has meant I've just not had time to follow through. But yeah, apparently I think she has returned as someone who looks like Madge, which was Ian Smith's character, Harold's dead wife.
Yeah.
Which is slightly amusing, because a few years ago there was a ridiculous storyline where he kept seeing her. She was kind of like a figment of his imagination, which meant they cast her and brought her back.
Yeah.
And she was there admonishing him for his various klutzy mistakes, and now she's brought back as someone who looks exactly like her, just to almost torture the character further. But that's the sort of beauty of soaps, is that they can be poignant, they can be silly, they can be exciting, they can be boring. There's so many mix of things that you can do. And to sort of see characters, and we've said this before, like, you know, as we said, like Paul Robinson for Neighbours or Ken Barlow for Coronation Street, to sort of see characters live their lives, characters, just a character, exist as a young man and watch him carry on to being a sort of mature middle-aged man in their 60s or 70s or even 80s in some cases, is incredible.
Yeah.
That's an incredible bit of storytelling, visual storytelling. And yeah, is that art going to be gone? It might be.
Yeah. Yes, it could be.
How are you anyway?
Yeah, I'm all right, thanks. Yeah, you mentioned Lance Henriksen earlier.
I did.
So I decided a few nights ago to watch Aliens on the 4K print on Disney Plus, which doesn't always come through at 4K. It's probably coming through at 2K most of the time. Pointless technical data there for most of you. But
it probably comes in for 4K for everyone else, and they check the profile made up from all the algorithms of the social media apps that you've got, and they check and they see that you're a nerd, and they go, nerd, drop it to 2K. piss that guy off.
Yeah.
That's what I'd do.
I know, yeah. So we watched Aliens the other night, and this is an interesting thing, because as a younger person, I always felt that Alien was the sort of the plodder, and Aliens was the rip-roaring action movie.
Mm.
And having rewatched, I found Aliens, and I haven't watched Aliens for a long time. I'm not even sure I've watched it this century. And we watched Alien about 6 months ago. I really did not enjoy it as much as I enjoyed Alien 6 months ago.
So you enjoyed Aliens less than Alien?
Yeah. And
interesting.
Then what's interesting about this is that where I live is sort of like declining post-industrial area, which was also had a very popular Victorian seaside, which has also declined. And it had a cinema. It's since been rebuilt, but in those days, 40 years ago, it was a bit of a flea pit. And they let anyone in, as long as you paid. So my dad took me to see Alien, an 18 certificate movie, in 1986.
Wow.
When I was 10 and a half. Or nearly 11. And the questions about parenting there, perhaps. So, yeah, I saw it when I was quite young, and I absolutely loved the movie then, and I loved everything about it in terms of the hardware design of that movie is absolutely, the word gets bandied around a lot, but I do think it's iconic. The military hardware throughout the movie is really good. The vehicles, everything, love it. I used to love seeing the models in shops and things, and, you know, they'd pop up in the Black Horse comics as well. So I got a bit nerdy over Aliens for a time, as you can tell. But I just, and the video games as well, but I missed, it was like, I was noticing things that I'd never noticed before, like a lot of the, if not all of the alien kills, you don't actually see the aliens on screen with the actors.
It's interesting.
So when they're getting shot, whether it's Sigourney Weaver or Michael Biehn or any of the other characters, that you see them shooting the aliens, but you never see a moving alien in the same shot as the moment it gets blown up. It gets bulleted, you know, falls to pieces, acid splashes everywhere. Which, I mean, when you think about it, it's probably quite a difficult shot to do. So it probably explains why they did do the cuts. But there's obviously a lot of joining up of those things going on in my head as a 10-year-old. Seeing them in the same shot and everything, but that doesn't happen in the movie. It was weird rewatching it in that way and with an unintentionally critical eye, because I just meant to sit down and watch it and enjoy it, and then I found it was a bit slow as well. This was the original cut as well. It wasn't the director's cut.
Yeah.
I should add. But
which I don't think is any faster.
No, well, it's longer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I suppose it's a film as well, which takes a while to get going.
Yeah.
And I imagine to some degree the bits, everyone really remembers the bits where it gets going rather than the sort of plod to getting going.
Yeah.
I mean, I always find it funny. The thing I find funny about that film is James Horner's score. And we've talked about this before. I know in the 15 years we've been doing this No Award podcast, but... That score that he was amazingly good at self-plagiarizing himself and just taking bits that he liked and reusing. And there's a lot in Aliens which you'll hear in Wrath of Khan, and there's stuff in Wrath of Khan you'll hear in Battle Beyond the Stars. It's really weird how close he plagiarizes himself, but they were great little bits of orchestral score. But yeah, it's an interesting film. I think I always preferred it in my memory to Alien.
Yeah.
Just because of the energy, I think. There is when it gets going, it gets going. I think it depends on what you like, because I mean they're both genre borrowers. The first film is very much borrowing from the sort of classic murderer sort of you've got almost Agatha Christie-ish in a weird way. Yeah. Sort of, and then there were none sort of approach of slowly being picked off one by one. Although in this case, kind of know who's doing it, but it has that sort of energy to it. While the second one is very much just a straight off Vietnam borrow, which of course at the time were to a penny. It was a big, obviously a cultural catharsis in the States looking at Vietnam, post-Vietnam. So it is really just Vietnam in space. So it kind of depends on what you're interested in. If you're interested in something which is like a chilling killer, you know, slasher movie, I suppose, probably better than Christie. But I think at the time there was kind of, as we've said before, in that what the press releases were kind of really sort of pushing its angle of like, here's the crew, who's going to survive, almost like it was a murder mystery. But in the end, it's more of a sort of slasher horror than it is murder mystery. Mm. But yes, Aliens is very much sort of Vietnam film, and I find those kind of interesting, so I think that was the one I kind of like. I've never been massively keen on the Aliens franchise, and its revival has not really interested me either, because it's still really doing the same things. And I think that's the problem for it, is that it's limited to, and when it's tried to deviate from, it has been massively chastised by its fan base, limited to the Xenomorphs, and there's only so much you can do with them before you're just going over old ground over and over again. It's the same sort of secular thing. I always felt the franchise would have done better if it had actually pushed forward and the third film done what the proposed Alien film that Ridley Scott shut down was going to do, the proposed redo of Alien 3, essentially, and actually taking it back to Earth and your major fight being with the company.
Yeah.
Because that really is your through line through the whole three movies, is that the enemy is the company.
And yet
that's kind of lost, to just keep going back to the life cycle and the fight against the unstoppable killing machine. And it's like, you know, there's only so much you can do with that.
And when
they try and do something different, people go, oh, that's not right, that's no good, don't like that, which was Prometheus's problem to some degree.
Yeah, I've struggled watching the later Alien movies, to be honest. Alien 3 I've watched a couple of times, well, it's mainly because of the cast than any other reason. Alien 4, is that called Alien Resurrection?
Yes.
Yeah. was interesting, but I think I probably liked it more than other people did at the time. The Alien Predator movies, I just can't get away with at all. I've watched a couple of those, and I just they feel a bit gratuitous, and there's not really that much happening for me. Yeah. So I've watched Prometheus. Was the first of the two, was it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I've watched Prometheus, but I haven't watched the most recent one.
Oh, well, there's Covenant and there's now Romulus as well.
Oh, right, okay. I watched Prometheus. I haven't watched Covenant and I haven't watched Romulus.
But it does feel like a franchise which is very much trapped, because you've got a killer that can have no other motivation than what it does.
Yeah.
And that is the problem. I know there was a comic one where I think there was a comic version where they gave one of them personality and it was like a soldier, proper soldier with a puffing a cigar. But, you know, there's really not much you can do with it. And yet I think, funnily enough, Predator is the more interesting franchise. And it's not to say that it's always been the more successful in its outcome and its output. But the recent Prey film that they did, I thought was really quite an interesting romp, because it allows you to play with the protagonists in a way that doesn't seem to work with the Alien films in the same way. Certainly like with Prometheus, where, spoilers, they kill off the central character for the second one, so you lose that through line. And I think that's part of the problem, is maybe Aliens would work, and maybe this is where Alien Earth will work, is in the way The Walking Dead works, where you have the focus is the protagonists and how people work, and then they're having to navigate around a deadly world, and your cast shifts and changes as you move along. So you're not stuck with one person to a point where the world starts to feel they seem invincible to a world. The world remains dangerous because anyone can die. But you have a sort of more of like a through line of cast which you follow. While the movies, you just kind of have people who are either disposable or stay too long, or just get forgotten, and so you lose the through line.
Now, if you're listening to this bit, that means that you are not signed up to our free Patreon, which affords you early access to the podcast, ad-free access to the podcast, and extended editions. This week's edition, in which James and I speak about adolescence and its cinematography style more than the actual content of the serial, that exists purely at this time in our Patreon-only edition of the podcast. It's free. Anyone can go and sign up for free to access the podcast early, ad-free, and in longer format. We do have paid tiers, which give you some additional features should you require them. I'd encourage you to go and check out our Patreon and sign up to the podcast that way, to be always aware of when we've got new material out, what we've got coming up. I often share details about upcoming podcasts through the Patreon, which pops up on your mobile app if you've got the Patreon app. It's a very useful notification system. And we've got plans for other podcasts and material to go live on Patreon prior to public release, and we want you to be there with us checking it out. So head to patreon.com/Casterbris, check for the link in the show notes, sign up free, and get this podcast early, ad free and longer. Mrs. Cheers. That concludes our discussion for this week, which, as you probably discovered, was quite a wide-ranging and at times meandering.
Organic, Christian.
Organic, beg your pardon.
We're looking for the awards. We organically
navigated various topical discussions ranging from aliens and Thomas the Tank Engine to...
Because this was a one take as well.
It certainly was.
Every week it's a one take.
It's a one take.
As you can tell.
All the way through to Netflix's Adolescence. Anything we've mentioned that requires any further research or context, you'll find in the show notes. We'll be going out first on Patreon as ever. So if you're listening to this and it's the middle of the week, then you missed it going out early on Patreon. We'll be back next week for another edition of Casteris. Until then, it's goodbye from us.
Bye.